Good morning. See everyone out this morning. Bob is quarantined, so he didn't set up the iPad, so I'll take credit for everything that goes well this morning. And the blame, I guess, for if it doesn't. I'm going to tell a story, and I've gotten lost a lot of times in my life, so it's kind of just picking which time I wanted to use as my example this morning. But when I was about 17 years old, a friend and I took another friend home whose house we had never been to before, and we got there pretty easily, and that's because that friend was with us. So when we left, we thought we were going the right way home, and it became pretty obvious pretty quick that we were not. And when we just kept turning, we think, well, let's just go down this road. Maybe we'll find a mailbox of somebody we know, and that didn't happen. And let's just go down this road, and that didn't happen. And it just seemed like there was just, every time we go around one corner, there was another one to go around. And this just kept happening over and over again. We'd get confident that we would find a paved road, and then there would just be more disappointment. We'd really just kind of given up and resigned ourselves that we were going to live the rest of our lives in the Twilight Zone. And we finally turned around one more time, and we seen headlights in the distance, and we ran to it, and that guy said, well, if you just turn left here and then take a right, you're right there at the highway. We were 5 minutes away from the highway. And when I think of that story, I think really that's pretty similar to how life is. And we feel that way about a lot of things. The laundry is one of those things. One more load and it's done. Last load. And as soon as you're done with that, you look down and the clothes you are wearing are dirty and you're going to have to wash them as well. So with so much of that, in a new year or a new project, we feel like that. This is our year. One more burst of effort. After this is done, then everything is going to be peace and tranquility on the other side. Movies and stories kind of teach us to think like that. There's a conflict, you fight through that conflict, and then on the other side, you live happily ever after. You just have to get through that one last conflict. You just have to get through that one last task. You have to make that last turn, and just on the other side of that corner, things are going to be perfect. We often go into projects or things on our to-do list with that kind of mentality. Once I turn that corner. But then we often see another corner coming up. And just past that next corner is another corner and another one. And we can get incredibly discouraged, feeling like this effort that I have to be a better person or to have a better life or to be the husband that I always wanted to be or the father or the wife or the mother or the neighbor or the Christian that I always wanted to be. If I can just get through this one thing, then on the other side of it, everything is going to be great and only to be met with another corner to turn. And we find ourselves being discouraged. I want to encourage us this morning. I want to encourage us by one, like we talked about last week. We're not the only ones to feel that way. We talked about the Jews coming back from captivity. Remember, they were carried off to captivity by Babylon. Jerusalem was destroyed, and they stayed in captivity for generations. And then Cyrus of the Persians, he says, you all can go back. And so Zerubbabel, he led the first group of exiles back to Jerusalem. And I just know that Zerubbabel felt like once this temple is rebuilt, then that's the end of our punishment. And on the other side of the temple being built, when we turn that corner, we are going to have the life we always wanted. We are going to live happily ever after. But Zerubbabel figured out pretty quick that as soon as they turned that corner, there was another corner coming up. And then Ezra, he brings back a group of exiles from Babylon to Jerusalem. And I'm sure that Ezra thought, I've got the law. I've got the Torah, the law of Moses. And once the people hear it and they respond to it and we get around that corner and on the other side will be our happily ever after. And then Ezra turned that corner only to see another corner coming up. Nehemiah must have thought the same thing. Once we get back, and he led a group back to Jerusalem, and he thought once the walls are built around Jerusalem, once we turn that corner, then on the other side of that will be our happily ever after. But what they didn't know, and what we do in retrospect, is that they would end up waiting another 400 years for the Messiah to come. And now, even though the Messiah has come, there is still some waiting to do and some corners to turn. But I think we can find a lot of encouragement in the story of Nehemiah. And we're going to look specifically at the Nehemiah part of the story. We talked last week how Ezra and Nehemiah were originally the same book. But Nehemiah starts out by telling us that he is the cupbearer for Artaxerxes. And he has an incredibly important job. And he asks about the exiles who have returned to Jerusalem. And now, just so you understand, it's been about 90 years since the first wave of exiles have came back from Jerusalem, or to Jerusalem. And I think if you were to imagine yourself living in a foreign land and you're thinking, this is almost over. All of our prayers are about to be answered. God's going to call his people home. It's going to be this new golden age of Jerusalem, and everything is going to be great and everything is going to be awesome. It's been 90 years since that first group went back, and Nehemiah asks, how are things going? How are things in Jerusalem? Tell me what it's like there. And he goes and he gets this report that the walls around the city are still in rubble, and that the people are living in shame and reproach. And so he gets that report on the state of Jerusalem, and in verse 4, in response to that, he says, "As I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant that I now pray before you day and night for the people of Israel, your servants, confessing the sins of the people of Israel, which have sinned against you. Even I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against you and have not kept the commandments, the statutes, and the rules that you have commanded your servant Moses." And then he prays to God. He asks him to remember the promises that God has made to the Jews and the promises that Nehemiah are holding on to. And it shows you Nehemiah's heart. He says, "Remember the word that you commanded your servant Moses, saying, 'If you are unfaithful, I will scatter you among the people.'" And Nehemiah is saying, yes, that's what's happened to us. We were sinful, we were unfaithful, we disobeyed, and you scattered us among the people. But if you return to me and you keep my commandments and do them, though your outcasts are in the uttermost parts of heaven, from there I will gather them and bring them to that place that I have chosen to make my name dwell there. Again, Nehemiah says, remember the promise you made, that if we disobey, you will scatter us. And that's what's happened. But if we return to you, and we want to, and we want to be gathered, and we want to keep your commandments, and we want all of these promises to come true, he says that they are your servants and your people, whom you have redeemed by your great power and by your strong hand. O Lord, let your ear be attentive to the prayer of your servant and to the prayer of your servants who delight to fear your name, and give success to your servant today and grant him mercy in the sight of this man. Nehemiah is saying, I'm going to go and talk to the king. And God, please help this conversation with the king go well. And then he tells us that I was the cupbearer to the king. And if you know the story of Nehemiah, you know that the king is totally receptive to his request to go back to Jerusalem and to start rebuilding the walls. The king sends Nehemiah back with men and supplies, and he goes and he starts rebuilding the walls. And of course, they face all kinds of opposition from people like Sanballat and Tobiah that they have to struggle against. And all the while, if your mind is trained by other stories and you don't know how this story ends, you think, yes, Nehemiah, you're almost there. If you can just get these walls rebuilt, if you can just get through this project, if you can just turn this corner, I'm sure just around it, there's going to be paradise. I'm sure just on the other side, Nehemiah, is your happily ever after. But as they are rebuilding the walls, you start to see that there's more than just one problem. In fact, Nehemiah finds out that some of the nobles among the Jewish people are oppressing their poor Jewish brethren. And in Nehemiah 5:6, he says, "I was very angry when I heard their outcry and these words. I took counsel with myself and brought charges against the nobles and the officials. And I said to them, you are exacting interest each from his brother. And I held a great assembly against them. And of course, the law of Moses had told them, don't charge your brothers and sisters interest. If you're going to loan them something, do that, but don't charge them interest. And he continues on, and I said to them, we, as far as we are able, have bought back our Jewish brothers who have been sold to other nations. But you even sell your brothers as they may be sold to us. I mean, we've been trying to get rid of and to being free of slaves, and now we're back home and you guys are enslaving each other. Says they were silent and they could not find a word to say. So I said, the thing that you are doing is not good. Ought you not walk in the fear of our Lord to prevent the taunts of the nations of our enemies? Moreover, I and my brothers and my servants are lending them money and grain. Let us abandon this exacting of interest. Return to them this very day their fields, their vineyards, their olive orchards, and their houses, and the percentage of money, grain, and wine, and oil that you have been extracting from them. And the nobles were surprisingly open to this. They say, you know what, you're right. We shouldn't have been doing that. And they start to reform, and they start to change what they are doing. And Nehemiah gets through that obstacle, and he turns that corner. And then chapter 6, verse 15 says, so the wall was finished on the 25th day of the month of Elul in 52 days. 52 days. The walls, they have been back for 90 years. So it's been well over 100 years since Nebuchadnezzar came through and tore Jerusalem down. And in 52 days, the walls are rebuilt. And Nehemiah says, and when our enemies heard of it, all the nations around us were afraid and fell greatly in their own esteem. For they perceived that this work had been accomplished with the help of our God. God here is with them. And again, I think if you would think of how stories normally go, you have to think that this is it. And that Nehemiah is about to see all of the promises come true. The temple is here. The walls are here. The people are starting to respond to the law, and things are starting to go well now. This has to be the last obstacle, the last corner. Once you get through this, everything is going to be better. So they celebrate the rebuilding of the walls. And then they realize that they haven't been celebrating things like the Feasts of Booths, and so they do that. And they confess their sins to God, and they make a covenant with God, and there's sort of this break that happens, and about 12 years goes by, and Nehemiah goes back to the king in Babylon, and then he hears back from Jerusalem that there are more problems. He hears that Tobiah, one of the enemies that they've been dealing with the entire book, actually has a room in the temple, and he's living inside the temple. So Nehemiah comes back, and he throws Tobiah out, and he finds that the priests and the Levites aren't being taken care of. So Nehemiah deals with that. The people were working on the Sabbath, so Nehemiah deals with that. And the same problem that plagued Ezra in the last part of Ezra, the men are still marrying pagan wives, and that frustrates him. So look at Nehemiah 13, and this is the last chapter of Nehemiah. It says, in those days I also saw the Jews who had married the women of Ashdod, Amnon, and Moab, and half their children spoke the language of Ashdod, and they could not speak the language of Judah, but only the language of each people. Now again, I want you, as you know how stories sort of build, how we have all of this anticipation, all of this expectation, and again, we know the rest of the story. We know that the Messiah is going to come 400 years later, but they didn't know that. I'm confident that Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah fully expected the age of the Messiah, the age of blessings and peace and prosperity was just around the next corner. And when they got around that corner, they found another corner, and then another corner. And then you get the walls built, and you've got foreigners living in the temple, people working on the Sabbath, the priests and the Levites not being taken care of. And Nehemiah, every time he turns around a corner, every time he does a load of laundry, he says, there's more to do. There's more to do. There's more to do. Can't you just empathize with his frustrations and his disappointments, his discouragement? Verse 25 says, and I confronted them and cursed them and beat some of them and pulled out their hair. And I made them take an oath in the name of God, saying, you shall not give your daughters to the son, to their sons, or take their daughters for your sons or for yourselves. Nehemiah did so many good things. God was with him in doing so many good things. But I can't help read this and think, man, it gets so discouraging sometimes. I can't read this and think that Nehemiah was acting rationally or that Nehemiah was acting lovingly. I beat them and I cursed them and I pulled out their hair. But we understand that frustration, don't we? When we have all this expectation, once I get done with this project, once I get this straightened out, once I turn this corner, everything's going to be good. Everything is going to be happily ever after. But as we said last week, I think the whole point of the story of Ezra and Nehemiah was not to say that once they got the temple built, they lived happily ever after. The story is not to say that once they got the law back, that they lived happily ever after, or once they rebuilt the walls. But the story was to say that once Nehemiah got there and he pulled out people's hair, that still wasn't what it was. But it was to say that the people did faithfully continue to wait for the Messiah. The faithful continued to press on. The faithful continued to wait on the Lord. The journey was not completed in Nehemiah's day. But the steps that he took and the people took in that day were an important part of the story. So here's the idea I want us to walk away with this morning, is every step in the right direction is an important part of the story. Every step in the right direction is an important part of the story. We might think before we take that next step, we might wrongly think this is my last step. This is the year. This is the change. And once that step is taken, or once that change is made, or that year comes, and we turn that corner and everything is going to be finished, I can finally rest. That might not be true. It might be true, but this might not be the last step of the journey. But this might be the corner that you turn and you see another corner waiting. But don't let that get you discouraged. What Nehemiah did, he accomplished with the help of God. It was an important part of the story, but it was not the last part of the story. For generation then, after generation after generation, it would require that there be some faithful men and women of God who would continue to drive the story forward, who would continue to take that next step in the right direction. And you and I, as we await on the appearing of Jesus, as we continue to wait and we continue to turn corner after corner, we can get discouraged and start thinking that none of this really matters. But it does. Every step in the right direction matters. Every change that's a good change, eliminating something bad from your life, adding something good to your life, or changing something that needs to be changed. It might not be the final step that needs to be made, but it's an important step. Sometimes we look ahead and we think, I have so much changing to do, that there is so much that I still need to accomplish. I don't know where to go or what to do. And the answer is just take the next step. Just do the next right thing. And again, it may not be the final step, but it's an important step in your story, in our story. And know that next step that you take is a step in the right direction. You're doing that with God. Just as Nehemiah went with God, you have even more confidence and even more assurance now that the Spirit of God fills you and goes with you. So you and I go together, we go with God, and I don't know how many steps are left in your journey, and I don't know how many steps are left in my journey, but when I think ahead of the things that I want to accomplish and the person I want to be, that can be very overwhelming at times. It's encouraging to me to know that I just need to take the next step. And maybe there's someone here this morning and you're thinking that the next step you need to take, and it might be getting baptized into Jesus, but that won't be your last step. It might just be your first step. And as you step into that water and you are raised up to a new life, you have to just keep moving forward. And maybe there's someone here this morning struggling in some way, and maybe something needs to be eliminated. Don't fool yourself in thinking once that is gone, everything is going to be great. That might not be the final step. but it's an important one. You can't get to where you need to go until you take that step that you know you need to take. There might be some good habits that you need to incorporate in your life. Again, don't fool yourself into thinking if I take that step, if I start reading my Bible more, that everything is going to be great. That might not be the final step. But it's an important step. It's an important step in your story. And together as a church family, as we walk together, as we cross new thresholds and we make decisions together, we're not fooling ourselves into thinking that this is the last corner that we're going to have to turn. There will be more struggles. There will be more battles. But there will be those steps together that we take with God and with each other. You don't have to take that next step alone. So if we can help you in that next step, whatever it may be, please come as together we stand and we sing.